move from exposure and affected populations to the perceptions of the healthcare professional community, the health system, and how they positively contribute to dealing with this ongoing issue. And our leader for this part of the session is Britton Pichon.
Well, thank you everybody for being here. And I want to thank the APHA for letting me come out here. It's snowing in Vermont, and I got 3 days off of my surgery rotation and 4 a.m. wake-up calls to be here, so thank you for making that all possible. A little bit about the backdrop of this project. As part of UVM's medical curriculum, as first years, we're paired with 8 to 10 of our fellow classmates, and we meet weekly to discuss issues that are important in healthcare, and particularly in public health. And then during our second year, that same group of 8 to 10 students is paired with a local community organization to carry out a public health project of that organization's choosing. For us, my compatriots and I were assigned to the Vermont Department of Health, and they have this question of barriers to pediatric blood lead screening. So with that, I will continue forward. I have no disclosures. I'm just a medical student. Nobody's ever going to pay me. And I have huge debt, but that's not the topic of conversation. Background, I think we're all here because we all care, and I think we all know that the pernicious effects of lead have been well documented, and I think it's important to note that the severity of those effects correlates to increasing blood lead levels. Blood lead level of 40 micrograms per deciliter is much worse than a blood lead level of 5 micrograms per deciliter. And right now, the CDC has a current recommendation that blood lead levels of 10 micrograms per deciliter are dangerous. This is a philosophy echoed by the American Academy of Pediatrics and also the Vermont Department of Health. But I think in the recent literature, there's been a lot of data to suggest that there's no safe blood lead level, and that even blood lead levels of less than 10 micrograms per deciliter are dangerous. And I think that this has started a whole resurgence of the conversation of lead and lead-based poisoning. And so some blood lead levels less than 10 micrograms per deciliter have been associated with neurological and social deficits, including attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. A little bit about the Vermont Department of Health. The CDC currently recommends that in the absence of being able to perform a complete risk or exposure assessment, states should adopt a policy of screening at universally at 12 and 24 months. This is, in fact, the Vermont Department of Health's policy, and we have data that says how we're doing, essentially. And in 2006, we screened approximately 79% of all 12-month-old children. I think that in the grand scheme of things, from the posters that I've seen today and throughout the conference, that's a pretty good number. And I think that Vermonters and the Department of Health is satisfied with, you know, that being a good place to start. But when we look at the data from 2006, we also see that Vermont providers are not doing a very good job at 24 months. We're only screening 41% of the pediatric population, so hence this project. The Vermont Department of Health wanted to know why that number was so low and what we could do about it. So, the objectives of our study are obviously to identify the barriers of screening. Am I going in and out? Sorry. Identify barriers to screening at 24 months of age, and then to also take it one step further and try and identify predictors of lower lead screening rates. So, to do this, my companions and I developed a web-based survey that we put onto SurveyMonkey, and we submitted that survey to all Vermont licensed pediatricians who met our inclusion criteria. We excluded pediatricians who were subspecialists, who practiced on the border and saw primarily patients in New Hampshire or New York or Massachusetts. And all told, we came up with 98 pediatricians that we submitted this survey to. Now, we also have data from the Childhood Lead Poisoning Prevention Program Registry and the Vermont Immunization Registry that gives us individual practice screening rates. So what we were able to do is look at the median screening rate of 24 months and separate providers into a higher screener or a lower screener category, allowing us to compare the two groups and see what differences might exist. So the results. I'm going to highlight a handful of results that I think are important from this study. We got 72 out of 98 providers to respond to the survey. That was 3 months of hassling, but we got them to do it, and I think we're relatively proud of that number. We have a 74% response rate, and I think because we targeted all pediatricians in the state of Vermont, we have a fairly decent idea of what that cohort thinks, what they feel, what makes up who they are. So we think that the data says something. A little bit about the demographics. We looked at your typical demographic variables. We looked at sex. We looked at age. But then we also wanted to look at variables that we thought might influence lead screening practices. That included the size of the city in which they completed their residency training, their number of years in practice since residency, whether they practiced in a more urban setting or a more rural setting. Chittenden County is where Burlington is located, and it's the most urban, if you want to call it that, city in all of Vermont. We looked at practice type, academic group, and solo, and then we also looked at the patient population that individual physicians took care of in terms of the proportion of that patient population on Medicaid. And what we found was out of all those demographic variables, three kind of stood out as significant when we compared the higher screeners with the lower screeners. So those providers that practiced in Chittenden County were more likely to be lower screeners. Similarly, those in academic practice were more likely to be a higher screener, those in group practice more likely to be a lower screener, and perhaps the most interesting finding is the higher the percentage of Medicaid population a physician had, the more likely they were to be a higher screener. We also looked at what pediatricians thought about what the most concerning exposures their children potentially had. And not surprisingly, lead-based paint ranked the highest at 35%. And at the same time, toys ranked similarly very high. When we did this survey, it was when all the news media was focusing on lead-based paint and toys, and so I think that that's the reason why toys was ranked so highly. Perhaps slightly concerning for the purposes of our study, Vermont actually has a very significant exposure risk in the soil. And in water as well. And that did not make the top of our pediatricians' list as part of their concerns. We looked at where pediatricians got their information regarding lead screening practices and how they should direct those practices. And I think we were very happy to see that pediatricians looked to the Vermont Department of Health more than any other source, and also to the American Academy of Pediatrics. We thought this was a very good thing. Slightly more concerning, however, was the fact that not that many pediatricians used peer-reviewed literature. I'll leave that there. We looked at the common barriers. I mean, that was our primary objective, and so we looked at things like parental opposition, low exposure risk, the ease at which samples were obtained, patient compliance, staffing, and we thought that cost might be a potential barrier as well. And when we looked at all of the barriers from all the physicians that they report, it's a relatively even distribution across the map. While parental opposition, no exposure risk on assessment, and difficulty obtaining a sample ranked higher than some of the other potential barriers that we hypothesized might be a problem. And it's nice to see that cost is not as big a factor as we thought it was going to be. Cost of the physician was only 10% of the reported barriers, and cost of the patient was only 9%, so the lower end of the spectrum. And we wanted to know what pediatricians thought. We asked them what they perceived a dangerous blood lead level to be. We asked them their practices, what in terms of what ages they thought they should screen, how samples were collected, whether they were sent to WIC, hospital laboratories. We looked at reimbursement, whether they thought it was adequate. We also looked at whether or not even they believed in sufficient evidence for screening and whether they believed or were aware of the VDH's current recommendation. And I'm going to highlight some of those results for you now. The majority of physicians all believe there was sufficient evidence to warrant universal blood lead screening in kids. However, when we looked at whether or not they agreed with the VDH's recommendation to screen at 12 and 24 months, higher screeners were more likely to agree at approximately 70%, and lower screeners were more likely to disagree. The inverse was true at about 70% disagreeing with the VDH policy. So if you disagreed with the VDH policy, you had about a 5 times more likely chance of being a lower screener. Similarly, when we looked at blood lead levels and what pediatricians were comfortable with and where they thought the risk of negative health outcomes began, we saw the same type of relationship. Higher screeners were much more concerned about blood lead levels less than 10 micrograms per deciliter, while lower screeners didn't think there was any risk until you got above 10 micrograms per deciliter. So if you believed that dangerous blood level was greater than 10 micrograms per deciliter, again, you were more likely to be a lower screener. Now, we wanted to, it's great to see these individual variables on their own. It gives us a decent idea of what's going on, but we wanted to control for as many of these variables as we possibly could. And so we took it the next step and we did a multivariate analysis. And we took all of our variables and we input it into a stepwise forward and backward logistic regression to develop a predictive model of pediatricians and whether they were to be a higher or a lower screener. And when we did that, we got some very interesting results. We found out that men, male pediatricians, were approximately 8 times more likely to be a lower screener than female pediatricians. Since we've done this study, we've explored that variable a little further, and we think that it's actually an association between being a male pediatrician and believing a blood lead level is greater than 10 micrograms per deciliter, and that shifts all men into the dangerous category. Again, we see 10 micrograms per deciliter and above is associated with a 43 times greater risk of being a lower lead screener, and having a very high proportion of patients on Medicaid was protective against being a lower screener, and they were more apt to be in the higher screening groups. So we wanted to boil this down into recommendations we could bring back to the VDH, some sort of intervention they might be able to impose and target and try and improve 24-month-old screening. And when we looked at the univariate analysis and the multivariate analysis, both unmodifiable and modifiable risk factors, we came down back around to this idea of a perceived dangerous blood lead level being greater than 10 micrograms per deciliter, and we thought that that was a potential target for the Vermont Department of Health. So, limitations to this study. It's important to highlight limitations because, well, there are some. Respondents were assigned to screening groups based on practice screening rates. So while individual providers are adequately represented by the screening rates, those in group practice may not be adequately represented. An example of that would be a pediatrician who's in practice with 7 other pediatricians. He has a very high screening rate at 24 months, but if all of his colleagues have very low screening rates, he's going to have an artificially low screening rate in our study. Similarly, I think it's very important to note the median screening rate that we had for 24-month-old children is only 37.5%. That's a very low number. We'd like it to be much higher. So while higher screeners were noted to be higher, they're still far from ideal. But they are better than their lower screening compatriots. Conclusions. 88% of Vermont pediatricians reported using the VDH as a primary source of information for guiding lead screening practices, and therefore it's our conclusion that the VDH has the unique opportunity to redesign its physician education to convey the importance of universal blood lead screening at 24 months of age. The predictive model that we have and we've generated gives the VDH the ability to target specific pediatrician populations, and focus, we think, on their primary modifiable risk factor, that is, the perception regarding what is a dangerous blood lead level. And it really needs to put a lot of emphasis on the significant health risks associated with less than 10 blood lead levels of less than 10 micrograms per deciliter. Future work, I think we had some interesting results from this study. We're not completely done analyzing the data set. But it was interesting to see that the greatest predictor of higher versus lower screening is the percentage of the patient panel on Medicaid. And when we do a Nouse-Wagner analysis of the model itself, 63% of the model's predictive ability comes from that Medicaid variable. So it's a huge predictor of physician screening practices. And we need to really understand a little bit more concretely why an increased percentage of Medicaid correlates with increased screening rates. And obviously Medicaid mandates screening at 12 and 24 months, but we also have to look at physician biases, whether or not they believe Medicaid patients are at greater risk by virtue of socioeconomic status or by virtue of living arrangements or some other variable we haven't even really thought about. So I need to acknowledge my fellow medical students and colleagues, also the UVM faculty who made this possible. Jan Carney runs these groups and pairing them with the local organizations, and also the Vermont Department of Health, Wendy Davis, who was our primary advisor, who is now the Commissioner of Health in Vermont, and Austin Sumner, who played a huge role in this project, who does a lot of their environmental and occupational exposure work. I will say as a correlate, and I just learned this last week, so I'm a little bit off, The Vermont legislature just signed a new law, and it actually holds physicians accountable for not screening at 12 and 24 months, and I forget what the time point is, but if they don't have 85% of their kids screened by 2010, 2015, whatever that date is, they're going to be held legally accountable, and I'm not sure what the punitive damages or punitive course of action will be, but I think Vermont's fairly progressive, and I'm glad to see that they're taking this issue very seriously. So with that, I thank you, and I'll look forward to your questions.
You're on top. All right, our last presenter is Marissa Hotman, and she's going to elevate us out of the pediatrician's office and kind of give us a nice, elegant snapshot of Rhode Island.
Hi. Okay. Although I want to end up in a pediatrician's office, this is from my work that I did as a public health grad student at Brown, so it's Rhode Island-based.